Welcome into the Friday edition of Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I'm Adam Sager, of course, joined along with Triple E. You can find Sean on Twitter at Sean Unfiltered, me at Adam G. Sager. Find the show on everywhere. Go on Twitter, find our tweet that talks about where everywhere you can find the show on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, Rumble, YouTube, and other
iTunes, Spotify,
Apple Podcasts. If you want just the audio version of the show,
basically we're on a plethora of it. Saints, it's just a plethora.
That's a good word.
It is a good word.
A lot to talk about today. Obviously, last night, another good win for the Green Bay Packers. I want to talk about something Brady said yesterday on Colin Cowherd's show that I want to get your take and your thoughts on that topic. And then we got some interesting NFL games and a good amount of good college football this weekend. But I think we got to start with where we left off yesterday, talking about Charlie Kirk, the fact that the suspect has been found in Southern Utah. A 22-year-old named Tyler Robinson, his father turned him in, had been radicalized over the last few years in politics on the left side. He talked about to his family in recent days how much he hated Charlie Kirk. So it's not the end of the story, because now we have to see what all goes on with it. How far does Utah take the sentencing, and we've already heard the governor talk about the death penalty that they have, and it's good to see them work so fast and find him, and good on the father for turning in his son, who had admitted to him that he was the shooter of Charlie Kirk. Your reaction to them getting him? I know it doesn't change anything. It doesn't help the family get over this. It doesn't, you know, it never makes them feel better. But
right, there's not going to be a dangerous person
is in custody and is not going to be able to do anything like this again to anybody else.
Right. The things the emotions that, hell, you know how we're feeling it. Imagine what the wife's going through right now, because right. The kids still don't get it. You know, and they're not going to understand. And you can shield them as much as you want, but eventually their 70-year-old friends are going to remind them when they're seven. And, you know what I'm saying? Yep. You're not going to be able to. But making sure they know that, you know, to the daughters that their dad was a hero. The daughter, and I think it's a son, is the youngest. So if I'm not mistaken, yes. Maybe I'm
daughter is
with it. Four well. And one's one and a half or something young, right? All the stuff we talked about yesterday. If you didn't get a chance, hopefully you'll go and pick it up on YouTube or one of them and just hear, because, you know, we're pretty authentic and raw emotion without hot takes and without beat. Hell, we get into a great banter yesterday and we got into we get into disagreements with people, but you know what? We also don't, we're not going to beat you down for a different opinion. Unfortunately, somebody took somebody's life for a different opinion. And I just want to, Isaiah, always great to have you. Lamont, it's great to have you here, brother. Always love following you on Twitter, and it's great to have you. He's a big part of our morning show, Segs. You remember Lamont, who was a part of it. And a part of it. So we went through it all. So go back and listen to yesterday's podcast if you can, because I think you'll like what Segs and I had to say. Now, listen, politics is such a hot button for this, but it shouldn't be a violent hot button, and that's how a life ended. And Charlie doesn't go into these things violent, but and it's weird how I listen to comments of people that are cheering this on and saying the things that they're saying, some of them, not everyone, but the scumbags who encourage are glad that Charlie Kirk was shot and killed. Is here's how they justify. Well, he sparked people's emotion. He got him. He basically that he's the reason he got shot, because he's talking about his opinion in politics. So that means that everybody should get, then we're all standing in line to be shot by somebody who disagrees with our stuff, right? Is that the way society is? And I don't want to get caught up in that, Sakes. I'm still trying to be reverent about this. Let me just focus on what you said today, and I'm glad you brought it up, is teeing up this scumbag who took a life and he's 22 years old. We thought it might have been an expert with a high-powered rifle. No, apparently it was just a rifle that maybe he has a little experience, and we're going to find more. Yeah. Are we going to find out that somebody else was in on it with him if he admits that? And good on his old man, his dad, for doing the right thing. As much as it's your kid and you want to protect him, you got to protect him from himself and from others. The dad did the right thing, which has got to be the hardest thing in the world. But the kid either had a death wish for himself and or it's obvious. And I saw something. Didn't I see him debate Charlie up close and personal at one point too? Segs, I saw a video that had him, if it's the same guy, I mean, it was from a legitimate source on social media, that had him. It was a debate. Now, I don't know if they AI'd it into where he was talking, but it looked like.
Yeah. Charlie, I have not seen that, but
I saw it this morning. And okay. It was from a reputable source. And he was sitting there debating. They were going back and forth over he was dogging Charlie about not having his education, standing up there. You know, Charlie brings him up. So if I'm assuming it's the same guy because he was labeled as the same guy. Regardless, Charlie Kirk is dead because somebody else was a radical left wing nut job. That's how it goes. Now, you're right. Snake's not going to make it better for the family. Not going to make it better for the kids at one point, the wife. But I'm not sure how I feel about what you should do with him, Segs. And while it happened quickly, my concern before they found him, I'm still, Segs, I'm one of those guys, and maybe it's the journalism side of me or when we do these shows and when I get a guest on of digging deeper than a normal question would be. And I'm always this day and age, and I don't know why, but now maybe it's because what social media has created and we all have jumped on the truth, whether good or bad at times, is that I sometimes get caught up into, you give me an answer, I'm not sure I believe it yet. Especially when it comes right. to government, politics, CIA, FBI stuff. I don't care if it's somebody from the previous regime or this one. I'm always concerned that there's an inside job. I know that's good. I always am. And so when this was going on, I'm starting to think, well, how in the world does a guy get on a roof and get back, as we talked about yesterday, and then run to the woods? And he didn't get an hour head start.
Right.
He got what, a 10-minute, 12-minute head start? Maybe, whatever it was, 15 minutes. And then go and come back and leave the gun wrapped in a towel, suppose. I'm just going with all the stuff we've heard, yep. the clues along the way. And when did this happen? 2 days ago? We're on day three right now, right, Segs? Yep. So it happened on, today's Friday. It happened the on 10th. Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah, on 10th, Wednesday. So for two days, I guess, and yet it happened yesterday. So how does he avoid them in the woods when you've got helicopters and people on feet and dogs? And in the woods in Utah, how does he avoid you for that long?
Yeah,
so that's where it started. Yeah. But then again, maybe it's not long, Segs, because they got to be careful and making sure that he doesn't backtrack and go back to campus and, you know, all the things they got to do.
Right.
So I get it. If this would have gone into a week or a week and a half, Segs, I'm telling you now, I would have the conspiracy part of me, which is I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. It would have started to hit me in my mind that this isn't alone, that somebody, you know what I'm saying? And I still don't know that. That's for the people that are smarter. It hit me hard too, Lamont. Thinking about it would hit me hard, Segs, if this person would have been a hardcore liberal, because it wouldn't have been right. That's my point right. about this. Even though I'd lean to the side of Charlie, but I also know that I'm not fighting and battling and going to be hateful to somebody over politics as long as it's respectable conversation. It doesn't get personal.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie was really good at that. Even though he had a strong opinion, well, why wouldn't he? AOC, I'm just using her example. I cannot stand what she says. One thing I do know is that people listen to her and she's got a strong opinion. Whether I agree with her or not, another whole thing. So,
right.
But if she's sitting there holding one of these at a college campus, she doesn't deserve to get shot by a high-powered rifle by some 22-year-old that doesn't no military experience. The truth of the matter is he stared down a scope, and I was listening to Joey Jones break it down because I thought you and I talked about and your dad's my dad was 82nd Airborne and your dad's a police officer, you know, has been a police officer for a long time, is taking that shot. When Joey Jones said a decent shooter from where he was with a high powered rifle scoped or whatever can make that shot. And I'm thinking, damn. And then you get other people saying, no way a guy can make that shot. Well, he did. And apparently they found him and it's admitted his old man turned him in. But how you punish him. There's a part of me, Segs, and I know this is bad because I still have the anger inside me about this, right? It could be when you start to think about the family and all the years of what's going to have to happen with this family and what it did to the country yesterday. or 2 days ago, what it did to the country 2 days ago is, and it's not even just the person. The person, no doubt, is the most important. But you start to think, well, that can happen to anybody. It can be your daughter. It can be somebody's son. It can be anybody.
Right.
And especially somebody who's all the, he was innocent. He didn't anything wrong other than bring people together for dialogue that some disagreed with. And apparently this nut job did. Segs, I hate to say this. Maybe I don't hate to say it. When I think about somebody that rapes a little girl, right? Or so you hear those mm-hmm. stories. The first thing that comes to my mind, I'm an eye for an eye. Let's give it back the same way that that person, that's the first thought. And I hate to say that, but it is.
Oh, 100%.
It is. I'm the same. It is. And it's a good point real quick. In the Marines, we train with iron sights at longer distances, so it's an easy shot. Yes, and Ruski, thank you. I mean, I guns and I shoot, and I'm not an expert. I like to think I'm a good shot, but I haven't taken a shot at a target from 200 miles, right. 200 yards with a high-powered rifle. Just shooting on a range, joking around, right, Segs? But not in that case, under pressure when you're like a life's on the line. Does that pressure, and what is there so much pressure on the kid, or is he – do you have to be any kind of expert to make that shot? Well, if you've worked on it and you've practiced, I guess that can happen. But people that are far smarter than that, most of my time's on the indoor range, a lot short with a handgun, Seg. So, but when I hear this, and I don't know if I'm supposed to think this or not, but my first thought would be if you did that to my kid, you know, that I want an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
And I still almost feel like that. There's a part of me that wants to sit him in a chair and have our sniper sit away and just let him sit there and fester, wondering when the bullet's going to hit him in his face or in his neck, right? And then I got to take that anger and that archaic thought out of my mind and think, okay, don't give me the mental, because of course he's mentally ill, we talked about yesterday, or he wouldn't be doing this. He's a nut job, and you don't get to make that excuse. To me, we waste taxpayers' dollars. I know that's the way the system's set up. What are you going to tell me at a trial? Well, what are you going to tell me?
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do? You got an argument with him in a debate? You didn't like what he said about the Democrat? You don't like what he said about, you know, borders being closed or abortion or, you know, whatever it is that Charlie Kirk believed in that somebody disagreed? You're not going to like it. What are you going to tell me if you're the defendant on this guy that's going to give me any sympathy at all? None. I feel for his parents, as long as his parents raised him right and they didn't know that the kid has a wire loose. But Segs, that eye for an eye feeling that I have, then there's that, you know what? It's too easy to give him the death penalty. It's too, but I'm not the one making the decisions. Hell, you know who should be able to help make the decision? I hate to say this, is the family. I know that sounds, you know, I know you can't with the emotion, right. Segs, and I'm sure she doesn't want anything to do with making that decision, but there's a part of me that feels like when you watch movies that the person who suffered and that family should be able to tell you exactly what the punishment should be. But that's not the society and the government and the laws we live under. So I'm just thinking, Sigs, there's a part of me that I woke up this morning with that anger too before I went to my driving in. I'm still thinking about listening on the radio to these shows, right? That says, stick him in Gen Pop in a supermax prison. And every day, let him wake up scared to death of what's going to happen to him. Now, in this case, with the fact that it was that, I don't know, you know, if it was a child, he'd be dead in 2 days in prison in Superman. If he would have done this to a kid, which Charlie damn near is a kid, but you know what I'm saying? A 12-year-old, he'd put him in Gen Pop. He'd be at a Supermax. He'd be dead by the end of the day. So there's part of me that wants him to have the fear that some people have, I'm sure, when they're in a situation when it's a life or death situation. I want him to feel that. And that's awful, I know, but I can't control it considering he took an innocent life. So he lost all his rights to me. But my gut tells me that when that governor said, oh, by the way, we still have the death penalty, that he's not, and I'm not sure that he's going to suffer that, because there is zero excuse. There is zero excuse for what he did. And Ruski, Charlie would want us to pray for his soul, and yes, he would. And that is true. But I got news for you. I'm going to pray for everything involved, as I already have last night when it happened, because you're also praying for the future, for our kids, that other people don't get locked into seeing this and saying, I can't stand guys like Charlie and do it again. It's got to end somewhere. So I'll pray, but I don't know if I can pray for peace on the kid's soul. I don't, because he took an innocent life that family's never going to be the same. And for innocent reasons, I'm glad they found him and they did a good job. It was just, I'm wondering why, you know, you think, well, an hour is too long because he may be on the prowl again or maybe on the loose again. Right. But good on the dad. I'm trying to get Sigs. I emotionally, and your kids are younger, I emotionally struggle with trying to control the anger that I have. Because right now, if I'm a judge, I'd say, that's why I couldn't be a judge, right?
Right.
Because it'd be like, ugh. And I'm a mediator in the state of Texas. I'm certified, certification Sigs. I've told you that. And the one thing that when you go through certification too, and then you think of the family law, when you get into mediation of family and studying that part of it, to sit there, like when you have families that there's abusive or there, and you got to be the mediator. I'm sitting there thinking, I got to gear up for something like this because that hits me hard. It's not even my family, right?
Right.
And in this case, I don't know how people deal with it, but it's affected everybody no more than that family, obviously, and what they're going to go through. I usually have sympathy for some. I don't have any sympathy for this because it was done. It was an arrogant killing too. Broad daylight. With college students around on top of a roof, knowing there's cameras, knowing he was going to get caught. It was either going to get caught or he's going to be dead. And I'm glad they didn't kill him because that would have been the easy way out. I want to see how this goes. And I hate to say this, he deserves to suffer because he's going to make a family suffer forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it really just, it sounds like the governor's pretty set on trying to get this death penalty passed.
Won't be hard to convince a DA to do that, will it?
No, I don't think so. So, I mean, we'll find out as the days come over the next few weeks of what exactly will happen, but he has been found and that's great news. You just think back to, because a lot of times when something like this happens, the killer or killers end up shooting themselves.
Yes.
They take their own life and right.
They become martyrs, man. That's
yes,
what they do.
Yes. Yeah. And so this kind of reminds me of the Boston bombing. Remember when we had the manhunt going on?
Yes.
And it was, I was glued to the TV just to see. And then they ended up finding the younger one. They killed the older brother, if I remember correctly. They killed the older one and found the younger one hiding in a boat in a Boston neighborhood.
And the fact that they found him out of those small, like finding a needle in a haystack, but they will find you, right?
Yes, they will find you. And I'm like you, I'm glad that he was alive when they found him and they weren't, they didn't have to kill him because, maybe he'll give more answers. Maybe he knows more of something else that could be in the works. Who knows what it is, but at least they will get to talk to him and figure out what went into it. If anything else is going on,
and if there's somebody else that told him or paid him or any of that stuff,
that stuff.
Lamont, I'm with you. This is the part of me that how they have that devil and that angel on your shoulder, Sigs. We all have it.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to family or close to home, you're saying, you got to be talked out of doing something you don't want to do, right? We've all been there, right?
Yep.
And Lamont, when you say that we should publicly execute him, there's a part of me that feels that archaic feeling, honestly. Yeah. I'm not sure I'd have a problem with it, which is horrible to say, but the way this went down, it was also horrible for Charlie Kirk to have to, and anybody else, think about now, anytime you go in public and you're somebody who has a strong opinion on politics or something, you've got to be sitting there thinking, well, what's going to come from this? And Lamont, I'm not real surprised at the outpouring from the sports community for Charlie Kirk. I'm going to tell you why. Young, but an old soul. He had an old soul about him because we got 75-year-olds that love him. We got women. When I say love him, loved his opinion that he was well beyond his, the genius and the way he could talk with adults, even when he was a teenager. They were engaged and drawn to him and his conversation then and his energy. I'm not surprised. You want to know why? The sports world is filled with guys who may act one way and then go behind curtains. Thank you. Carpet curtain style. I'm still thinking about the public execution Lamont wants. Is go behind the curtain. I think they click a button that you wouldn't think they clicked in public. I'm just telling. I believe that.
I did search up Utah death penalty, how they do it. So the lethal injection is number one. That is basically the mandate now. But if the medication they use to inject in you is not available, a firing squad can be used. That is the backup. That was reinstated in 2015, according to what I read. And I mean, would it shock you if the medicine just happened to go missing? And well, because
we see it in a lot of other walks of life. Maybe they just ran out at the wrong time.
You want an eye for an eye? A firing squad sounds like the best way to do it. In
what if
my
they
opinion,
asked you to be a part of the firing squad? Would you do it?
Let's go. Let's go.
That's the way I feel,
And that's, you know, I don't shoot very often, but I have plenty in my life, and it's just something that when you do something like this, and I'm a proponent, you can look back through my Twitter and see when it involves kids, anything like that. Like it should be instant. I don't think there should be like, oh, he's found guilty.
Yeah,
oh, he can appeal 17 times and it takes 18 years to execute him. No, I think it should be in certain situations.
Yeah,
when it's premeditated like that. Yeah,
premeditated, planned. You woke up that morning knowing you were going to try and take a life.
Yes.
And Oldman 016, that's a great point. And I got a ton of buddies who hunt big game that they can make that shot. And if you're skilled, according to the experts that talk about it, and we got guys on here that are either military or know about it or big game hunters that know that a shot from 200 yards with that kind of rifle is makeable for, I don't want to say an amateur, but for somebody who at least got a clue about guns and has shot.
Well, the right type of weapon,
long rifle. Right.
I mean, they're making these things so, you know, not easy, but
much harder to miss. I can tell you that. Much harder to miss. And
yes,
unfortunately, on this day, and happy Friday to you too, Lucy. On that fateful day, he didn't miss. And the images still are
wish
awful.
We did, or wish he did.
That's exactly right. The question, you know, makes you wonder, Segs, was he primed? Sometimes, you know, you take a shot and bring out another one, you know, for guys that aren't the expert snipers, right? And this guy, it's not like he was a SWAT. He's 22 years old.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder, did he squeeze it and know that it landed where he wanted and know he got, you know, sometimes you make boom, 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 trying to see if you miss just to make sure, even though he's falling back. It makes me wonder, like, I mean, for somebody that young and not the hit, but just how he had this planned out to get, and he knew he was going to run and knew his exit strategy and stuff. So back to the premeditated part, he doesn't deserve a single right. And I am with you 100%. 100%.
Yep. All right. Let's move on.
Can we get on to something uplifting today?
Yes. Yeah. Something uplifting. Well, it's uplifting if you're a Packers fan, which I am not.
Hang on 1 second. Hang on. And Oldman, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Segs. I apologize. And I can't wait till we get the phones part where we can have you guys come on and actually talk to us. And we're with the new studio, we're doing that. And Lamont and Oldman, actually, I believe he missed his actual shot. That might be a great point. Because
yes, I've actually
Joey Jones was pointing out normally with that it's the middle of your chest.
Center mass. Yeah.
That's exactly right in the center mass. So if you miss, it's the old sniper mentality of aim small, miss small, Segs.
Right.
Now, if you aim at the earlobe and miss, you may not get anything. Or at the neck and miss, right? Now the truth is he was either aiming at the big mass or the big mass and the neck up to the center of the body as opposed, and he probably did miss, but on that kind of rifle, aiming small and missing small. That small miss was within a foot and hit a spot, obviously, that 200 yards in wind and elevation changes and all that. He had to know something about that, which means you Google it, right? Nowadays, you can get your information to AI it anywhere. And so that is a very, very good point. He missed the kill shot, but the kill shot hit a spot that could still kill him.
Yes.
So he might have even gotten lucky with where it hit after he missed the spot. But he's alive, so maybe knowing that he's going to die one way or the other, that he will actually – because those guys like to, you know, put together their manifest in their mind and maybe we'll get something out of him and knowing that is this just a one-off and a horrible one, or is there something deeper that goes in? It's obviously deeper because the guy's a nutshot and good on the family. So back to the game last night as we try to get into it. Isaiah, I know you're pumped. I know you're pumped, man, with what the Packers did last night.
28-17 win over the Commanders in Lambeau Field. Green Bay just looks really, really good. Yeah, they have their moments where it kind of looks back to last year where Love would get off and he kind of goes through stretches where he struggles throwing the ball to certain places. But in the first half, he was awesome, had over 200 yards passing, set him up to actually score more points right at the end of the half with a great throw. And then the kicker missed the kick. We had three missed field goals in this game, two within
the first week in a field goal sex since heading into the second one's been awful for kickers awful. So far. Just awful.
But yeah, so, and Jaden Daniels, let's just start here. Are you at all worried? And now he hasn't thrown a bunch of interceptions or anything, but I've seen some, I don't want to call credible because you never know who's really, really credible, but are you worried about Jaden Daniels in a sophomore slump? Or is it just going to be, he kind of comes back to earth a little bit from the such a high he was on as a rookie? Are you worried about the slump more or just kind of coming back a little bit?
I'll go back to the Packers in a second. I'll start with the last one first about Jaden Daniels. I don't think so, Segs. I think that he's going to be fine. I think that the natural part of it is I got more tape on him now.
Yeah.
And I got more evidence. Tape is, all that is evidence of what kind of game he's got. So what are you trying to do if I'm a defensive coordinator with Jaden Daniels right now? I am trying to make him a one-dimensional guy with his legs and his arm, because when he's doing both, he's deadly, man. He is to on a football field, he is really, really, really difficult to deal with. Hell, he rushed for almost 900 yards last year as a rookie in this league, which tells you two things. One, he's really good with his feet, but two is he's still learning the game. So where some of those, I'm sure he bailed out when he could have got to the check down, which happens. Sophomore slump, depending on who it would be. I think his accuracy is too good, Segs. Now, he was just a little, 20-something, 40-something. One is they threw it too many times last night. In the 40s, you don't win much. And they only ran it 19 times. And you know how I am about attempts, dude. I told you going in. Look at who. 30-plus attempts to 19 attempts. For the most part, rushing attempts dictate 80% or better of the time who wins this game. So his accuracy tells me that – while the numbers may not be as gaudy or the explosive plays, that he's too accurate to slump too long. It'd be like Tony Gwynn. I'm not comparing him to Gwynn, but a guy who knows how to hit singles, eventually, because he's not swinging for the fences, is going to dial back in and hit singles and be a gapper. So I think he's going to be fine. Just the key is for him, defenses are ahead of offenses at this stage of the season. He's 1-1 as Jaden Daniels. And he played, which could be one of the best two or three defenses in the league the way they're playing right now. And they got him on a Thursday night football. I'm not worried about him, but the way they defend him. And last night, what did concern me is their inability to get the ball down the field consistently. They played a lot of would he complete 20 some balls for 200 yards with like 4 yards in a per attempt.
He was 24 for 42 for 200 yards exactly, 4.8 yards.
And that's not enough. That's a couple yards away from where the explosiveness. So, and Green Bay dictated that. So, Segs, I guess probably after the first month, we'll get an MO on how they're playing him the rest of the season. But I think accurate, if he was a home run hitter, I'd say slump becomes more. But he's such an accurate passer with the football, and his legs can take him out of a slump as long as he's not trying to overuse them. On the Green Bay side, I can tell you now, for me, 1 week in and now 2 weeks in as we're heading into this weekend, that aside from the Philadelphia Eagles, I think the Green Bay Packers are the best team in the NFC right now. I do. I think they're dangerous. They were good defensively. Hell, they were good enough defensively without Micah Parsons. Now they've just opened up a can of worms how you're going to defend them. And you can see his impact quickly. They do everything pretty well. I think the Green Bay Packers right now are a very, very dangerous team in the NFC. And all they did was get better. Health will matter to every team. But – Lamont, you're right. The NFC North may have a serious problem, and that's the Packers. The Vikings are going to continue to get better. Detroit's not as bad as they looked, but they're not as good as they were. And the Chicago Bears will beat a Packers team or somebody in this division this year because they've got an offensive coordinator, who, meaning the head coach, who is going to okey-doke you on two or three plays this year that's going to get them a win they're not supposed to. So I think the NFC North is a bitch. And I'll tell you what, they are good enough to cause your shit to go sideways in a game because all four teams are capable and the Packers are nasty at the top.
Yeah, you talk about their defense and even Jaden Daniels' running ability. Last night he had 17 yards rushing. They sacked him four times for minus 21 yards. So that's a negative four. And where I
that know, may have been the key of the game, Sex, is yes. The legs didn't come into play.
I would have to look back and see how many times that happened to Jaden Daniels, because you mentioned running for 900 yards. You're normally you're averaging quite a bit of yards and you're not getting sacked that much. So I wonder if that even happened last year. That's how good the Packers defense was. One thing, right back to Washington real quick. They lose Austin Ekeler, Achilles injury. Their backfield right now has a seventh round rookie in Kroski Merritt, who had a really good first week, was okay, but only had, I think, four carries this week, if I remember correctly, looking at the box score. Yeah, he had four carries for 17 yards. So, I mean, a decent clip, but only four carries. And then it's an undrafted rookie for or second-year player, and then a third round or 3 years player out of the sixth round. And then Donovan Edwards from Michigan out on the practice squad. So they legit don't have any running backs that scare you at all. Now that Ekeler is hurt, how will that impact Jaden Daniels? Is not only a passer, but also a runner.
Big, unless they can find somebody that somebody will trade to them. Because it's hard to go get somebody off the waiver wire right now that's going to impact your team. It just is. There's a reason why they're on the waiver wire. That doesn't mean they can't revitalize their career. There's guys that are sitting out there, but Segs, Derrick Henry's not available. Right. McCaffrey's not available.
We just saw the Philadelphia Eagles at the end of last week trade for Tank Bigsby, who you know would have been kind of the perfect back to get. Kind of a bruiser that can get in there and get the hard yards.
And kill some clock,
Smaller, a little quicker.
What about Shipley in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if they're, you know, with Barkley and now Tank Bigsby, maybe they would unload him, but you would think they would like him as more their kind of guy in space.
Yeah. There's no, that's what I'm saying. Can you pry him away from and if you're Philly, do you want to give him to a conference team that's a direct competitor? I mean, not in the same division, same conference. So I don't know. I'm just trying to think of guys that are backing up on a roster, but good players.
I mean, I think if you're,
and is he a bell cow back? That's the problem. Can he do it 25? And I don't think he can.
If you're Washington, you're calling a team like Miami, who is
with all that speed,
a shit show right now.
You're talking about a team that's going to buy, that's going
to
sell.
Yes, that's ready to sell. That's ready to, you know, it's only week two, and the Dolphins look like they are done. Mike McDaniel is going to be on someone's offensive staff in like 8 weeks as just a contributor, you know, helping out. But maybe they have somebody that the Washington Commanders can go get. You know, you just look at these teams that are still kind of rebuilding and say, hey, do you have a back that we can take for a sixth or a fifth round pick? And because we expect to compete for the division with the Philadelphia Eagles, and we expect to advance further than we did last year as a playoff team.
Right. And with this, and Lamont, you mentioned about Damian Pierce, who happens to be. But now that the talk stays that Joe Mixon, it's starting to grow a little grimmer that Mixon may not be available for a long time.
Yeah, there was some whispers early on that it could be season
right.
for Joe Mixon.
And well, the whispers didn't get any weaker, because I had a guy on the Cruise of Texas today that the whispers are coming. They're a little louder than whispers now that you may be going on. And I'm telling you, that's devastating, because now you're relying on Chubb, who I love, but – he's got to be the one back that's a regular pound it back.
And does his body allow him to do that?
Right, as he's working back into it. Now, healthy Nick Chubb, that fully healthy in 2 years ago, I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
But Damian Pierce with Agunga Wale, who is your special team, special back. You know, you mix him in, not an every down back. And Damian Pierce proved that he's not an every down back. Now, as Lamont said, well, could you trade him? Maybe. If you're looking for a change up back that can touch it 15 times a game, that special teams give you home run hitter speed, who still is trying to find his way in the passing game, trying to find his way in the protection game. And the one thing he struggled with, which he won't have to there, is that zone read offense where they're inside their zone, Kyle Shanahan, that system is what they run in Houston. That's not what Cliff Kingsbury runs in Washington, a little different. But that may be to Damian Pierce's advantage, because now you can get him in space and some production. He's an explosive runner. He's not going to wear you out and be a 30 carry a game guy, but you may be able to steal a draft pick here. Lamont, the question is, are the Texans now willing to part with a guy with the Joe Mixon out that you may need your damn self? So trying to find that person and say, that goes back to, will it be a sophomore slump or will it be just the simple fact that Washington just doesn't have backs and now you got to use him in different ways, meaning you know who their best running back is? It's Jaden Daniels. Him.
Yeah.
And I sure as hell don't want him carrying it 200 times this year, as I'm a bit facetious. So there's a lot going on there for a team. And isn't it amazing how one injury, and I'm talking the Texans as well, can disrupt every single thing. I'm talking about outside the quarterback position. Look what it did to the 49ers last year offensively when McCaffrey was out. Look what it's good. Now you start scrambling around. It's like, damn, look how Philadelphia, as good as they were. They were pretty deep at running back. They still went and got one in Barkley, and look at the result after it was done. Yeah,
and they have Barkley, and they're still going and getting Tank Bigsby.
That's exactly right.
They're just loading up and getting deep.
Have you noticed we're switching back towards making the back a valuable instead of devaluing the back? Yeah. The back this last year and a half has now become more valuable. Washington's—they've got some looking to do, because Eckler was the perfect complement to what they try to get done there.
One last thing about Jaden Daniels, I mean, there's no way he can continue to take hits like this, right?
No.
I mean, he took a couple shots last night that I'm like, come on, you cannot keep putting yourself in this situation, taking these hits. And that organization should know better than anybody when it comes, when RG3, he was that guy that kept taking hits. And then finally he had the hit that kind of ruined his career. And that's all it takes, is one hit to really take away your legs. And then you don't have that ability to make teams,
miss. Legs are so brutal to game plan against, plus the way he's accurate. Now you've just made it easier on the opponent how to game plan if he's not going to use his legs much. And we saw it last night, the Jordan Love situation. Remember the Jordan Love situation last night on third down in the first half of the game? Say, I think it was second quarter. He took the ball, scrambled, and ran right through a corner and knocked the shit out of him. That's third down. You need the first down. I get it.
Yeah.
He can't live there either, and you don't want to live there. Even as big as Josh Allen is and he's delivering blows, at some point in time, I don't want him to take on an outside linebacker or a strong safety all the time, even though that's a fair fight because Allen's a monster. But they do take their toll. So with Jaden Daniels, the same way. Segs, I go on – you know my guy Matt Mascana, who's been a guest on this show. I go on and visit with him every week, and as an LSU guy, and
down in Baton Rouge. The
Jaden Daniels names comes up a lot, and it was the same in college. Is he's got this propensity to prove that he's tough, and I said, listen, well, they know how tough he is now. You got to be judicious with your legs and when to use them. At this point in time, you go from being tough to saying, dude, we know how tough you are. You don't need to convince us when we're up 3 touchdowns in the second quarter and it's 2nd and 9 and you get 7 yards. Get down. We got 2 downs to get the other 2. We don't need you taking on a strong safety, an edge rusher, and a doggone middle linebacker on the edge. And now if it's 4th down and 1 at the end of a game, dude, you got to do what you got to do. But there's got to be smarts, because I don't need him handing Gatorade, because guess what? The next option ain't Jaden Daniels. Yes. That's exactly right. So there's an art to it, Segs, and you are 100%. We say, well, come on, it's not that big a deal. Oh, it is. Because it just takes that one hit to the shoulder and you miss 4 weeks. And before you know it, you're 3 games out of first place and you're chasing the whole friggin' season. Yep. So he's got – that's his biggest weakness, honest to God. It's how to – is when to know when to get down and quit taking on guys, because even as athletic as he is, he's not 200 – he's not Cam Newton size. Even Cam doesn't need to take those hits, like I said, or Josh Allen. So, Segs, and that's such a fragile position, meaning – something that most teams can't live without is a great starting quarterback. And he's already proved. It's going to be tougher on him, Segs, to go back to your original question. It'll be tougher on him just because these defensive coordinators are smart enough to know he crushed us this way last year. He doesn't get to beat us using both his dimensions, his arms and his legs. Let's take one away and see if he can beat us the other way. That's the biggest challenge he's going to face this year, aside from does he have enough help offensively? And that's going to be the, that's going to be the gig. And once again, Laremy Tunsil had an illegal procedure penalty pre-snap, which is no shock there. I guess you are what you are.
Yes. Yeah. So good win for the Packers. Packers were able to slow him down passing and running. They are a dangerous looking team. All right, Sean, before we get to what Tom Brady said yesterday on Colin Cowherd, give me Flash Funding.
Yeah, Flash Funding. Stegs, you know, they're a partner and they've been a partner for a while and they are a big partner to this show. And I'm so grateful for them. And Flash Funding, guys, you're in business and you get these invoices that come and they say, hey, we'll pay it up in 2 months. And you're like, no, I'm trying to expand. I need the cash. So you ask yourself, well, how do I get that? Flashfunding.com, flash-funding.com, working capital in a flash. And how many times do business, I'm also a customer. For my business, other businesses I'm in, I needed it. And I needed it, in fact, because invoices out there, like, come on, man. And sometimes you get the invoice out there and they're not in too big a hurry to get it back to you. Like, I don't want to wait 90 days. I need that pay now. So what do? Flash Funding comes into play. It's working capital in a flash. It's invoice factoring made easy. And easy for you and easy for me as a customer as well. It's based in Houston, Texas, a family-owned and operated company. And I've been in their offices and sat down with them. And they're outstanding at what they're doing. And experienced factoring professionals. Big key here. And I needed it quickly for my business. And you know what? Within 2 or 3 days, that money was in my bank, ready to go into my business bank and to take care of what I'm doing. So turn invoices into working capital in a flash. Listen, the company doesn't want to wait 30, 60, 90 days to be paid for services they've already rendered and provided. None of us do. It's amazing. You provide them and then they take time to pay you, yet they wanted the services done now. Well, then Flash Funding comes in like a hero on that white horse to take care of their business. It's funding for your business and they provide it, purchasing accounts receivable and turning those invoices that may be paid sometime down the line in the future to fast cash today. Provides factoring, does flash funding services for companies anywhere in the country, anywhere in the U.S., maintain and helping you to keep that cash flow by giving you immediate payment on your invoices. Factoring gives business owners financial security, giving you the freedom to expand, meet payroll, and explore new opportunities. You know what your workers don't want? They don't want to wait to get paid. They deserve to get paid, and that's how your payroll does it, and Flash Funding's a big help. Flash-funding.com. I personally am a customer and know those people that are running it, and nobody does it better. Apply, review customer credit. They will buy your invoices and transfer funds directly to you. Factoring services, they direct them right into your account immediately. No, wait another 20 days for a check to clear. It provides factoring services by purchasing those accounts receivable for ready cash, freeing businesses from having to wait for those accounts receivable and payable to come in. The accounts receivable is where Flash Funding comes in because you're waiting for your receivables to come in and you need to have that funded quickly for payroll and for your current and future business needs. Flash-funding.com. It's flash-funding.com. A great partner. And I happen to be a customer before this. So there you go. And it's awesome. And for those of you that have reached out to them, wise move. And it'll help you and let them go out and collect your receivables. Quite frankly, you've earned it. And so is Flash Funding. Flash-funding.com. All right, Segs. So that was a big one. We saw two playoff teams, I think, last night, but Washington's going to have to expand their offense, and injuries have already affected them, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. So I was looking on Twitter, like we do, you know, all the time, looking at different stories, different stuff, and popped up this clip of Tom Brady on Colin Cowherd yesterday. And Cowherd asked him a question that and gave him a theory he had, which I thought was insane, but that's one of Colin Cowherd's things. He said that he believes that in year two, that the GM, the coach, the owner, the pro personnel guy, yeah, they should all get together at the Thanksgiving week of games and say, all right, is our quarterback our guy or not? Like that's the cutoff he gave.
Thanksgiving.
If you don't know by Thanksgiving of their second year, so Caleb Williams has 11 weeks left until Ryan Poles, Ben Johnson, and whoever else sits down and they say, is Caleb our guy or not? And he asked Tom Brady, is that a fair assessment?
So that was Colin saying that's what he thinks.
That was Colin's theory, okay. Yes. And then Brady said, well, how can you do that? Because every case is different. And he gave his case of, you know, sitting in a room with Drew Bledsoe. And he brought it back to coaching. And he said when he was young, I can't remember if it was rookie year or his second year, but they lost their QB coach to a heart attack in training camp. Like while it was going on, and Bill Belichick ended up being the one that came in the room the most in the quarterback room with just the quarterbacks. And he sat with them, went over all the defense, whoever they were playing that week, went over all the defenses, you know, how they play, what they do in this situation, what they do in this situation, what this scheme does, what this, you know, the way they line up here. And he said he did that for years. And he was still learning stuff in year six about defenses that Bill was teaching him. So he said, how can you in a year and a half, basically, learn everything there is to know as a quarterback about the NFL, especially when things are changing so fast? And how can we determine if a guy's ready? Well, hell, Jordan Love, look at last night. He wasn't even playing yet. So are we just supposed to say, well, we see him in practice, so is this guy ready or not? No, no, let's move on.
So this is of their rookie year or second year we're supposed
second
to
get year.
Second year.
Second year they're supposed to sit down.
So if you don't know by Thanksgiving or the second year, it's time to move on.
It's time to move on. If you cannot say this is our guy, this is our franchise quarterback, you move on. That's Coward's theory. But I just wanted to get your take on what Tom Brady said about learning constantly, especially with the changing NFL landscape every year.
I get the question by Coward, and I get his thought process, and I side with Brady for the most part on this, and I'll tell you why. But going back to Coward, the fact that, and listen, and you take into this account, Segs, if we're talking Caleb Williams, for instance, mm-hmm. it fits, right? Second year, Thanksgiving's coming up. We've seen flashes of brilliance, and we've seen some stuff that rookie playing like a rookie. He's got another new coach and another new coordinator.
Exactly.
So basically, he's in his second year, but he's a rookie with this new coach.
And that rookie year was
okay. So chaos. Do so with a coach. Shouldn't we do the same thing for the head coach? If you're going to judge the quarterback by that, by Thanksgiving a year two. So if Kellen Moore next year isn't any good, we got to fire him year two. But Miko Ryans. Okay. So they've been to the playoffs, and he's a hell of a coach, but they've been beat in the playoffs twice. So are we done? Do we know? So the question is, if you're still asking it, then you don't know. Segs, there's so many late. Then Geno Smith should have been out of the league.
Right.
Think about
it. And that was
now,
a guy.
He wasn't the first round pick. I'm sure Colin's talking about a high first round. He's your franchise guy when you drafted him. I do get the area he's talking about, but I think you got to dial it down from like Callahan Tunnel in Boston from seven or eight lanes to one. And the response by Brady's correct. All the factors that come in. Number one is some mature faster. Number two, if that's the case, then Aikman would have been in trouble because Troy, they were like 1-10 or 1-11 and getting his brains beat. I can remember being at a Christmas party. We were out of the playoffs, Sags. And I was at a Christmas party in Denver. And Elway's name came up at the party. And this was early in John's career. And, you know, I'd played against him in college and said, mm-hmm. Elway's my guy. And they're at a party and we're watching the Denver game. Struggled the first quarter. And there were people at the party saying, oh, man, what a bust. Got to get rid of the guy. Saw spectacular. But they were impatient with Elway. And I just simply said, can you imagine? I said, do you understand what the other side looks like? Do you know what the other side looks like not being John Elway? You know, he's going through it. Then they went and drafted Tommy Maddox. You know, the whole thing that went on. And some guys, it clicks with a coordinator, clicks with a new running back. Listen, now there are some. I can tell you right now, Anthony Richardson is not the franchise quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts. I figured that out quicker because there's too many signs. The number one being accuracy. 48% completion guys don't last. Now, he may go to somewhere else. And get Sam Darnold. We all thought he was franchise guy. Look now, he's become one. Sam Darnold would be out of the league if we went by thanks. And you know who loves Sam Darnold? Our guy Colin Cowherd loves him. And I get it. So Brady's right. Factors: losing a coach, new coach, somebody leaves, different system. But there are some SIGs that rears their head. You say, this guy's football IQ is horrible. And what we don't see that makes them know is on the practice field and in the meeting room. They know they know inside more. So they know. But I get where Coward's going with this. There's this feeling. But there are franchise quarterbacks that you draft them high, and then a year and 3 months into it, you're still not sure because we didn't know Jordan Love was going to be a franchise quarterback. They drafted him to be one. But even when he came out, you're like, yeah, I don't know. Trey Lance, they found out quickly in games that they didn't think he had what it took. And after a couple of years, they got rid of him. And they were right because he has it. So it does happen. I'm not worried about their feelings. If they're a franchise quarterback and they're better than the veteran, I'm playing the rookie. I could care less. And the second year guy, I got to have a tad bit more patience, because when you bail that quick, your franchise gets set back so far. I at least got to extend the energy to say, okay, if we change this, or if I change the coordinator, or if things aren't going well, maybe this type of offense, or maybe we got to adjust. The problem with some coaches is they make everybody adjust to them as opposed to them adjusting to the talent on their roster. Yeah. And that's what you get. So, man, I Brady's right. And who to defer to? The guy wasn't a first-round pick. He had to go through waiting. And I got news for you. On just pure ability to throw the football, Drew Bledsoe threw it. Tom Brady didn't throw it better than Drew Bledsoe. Then you put the whole package together. Bledsoe could sling it as good as anybody on the planet when he was playing. Unfortunate injury, door left open, pick the glove up, and then all the other stuff that goes with being a quarterback. See, it's usually the other stuff, Segs, that eliminate guy or bring him in. Oh, he doesn't study enough. He's lazy in the offseason, or he doesn't have good football IQ, or he takes it for granted. When you get a guy who's talented and works at it, well, you're going to end up getting possibly Cam Ward. So look at the team he's on. So if Cam Ward's team struggles, by October of next year, we're supposed to say, guy can't play, even though he shows flashes of it. Exactly. Some need players around him, and some can carry a team. That doesn't mean you're not good or not. You just got to build around him and get him good players. Some can carry a team with average players and make them better. But I'm not willing to quit on a guy unless he's shown me mental and emotional weaknesses, not physical. We can try to fix them. I think a year in Thanksgiving is too short a time, especially they're not getting coached as well as they need to get coached at a younger age. It's all 7-on-7. I got to give them time to settle in and see if playing, are you a practice guy or a gamer? And I need to see that. And I don't think one season's enough to see it.
See, and that's where, I mean, it's funny you said it because that's why I kind of wanted to just let you go. Because when I sat and listened to Tom's answers, and one of the things Coward,
and I haven't heard his answers other than what you said, so I'm assuming I'm on the same page.
He says why he does this is because now these kids are getting so many snaps with 7-on-7, high school football, college football, all this stuff, where Tom said it's not the same game. 7-on-7 is not tackle football. It's
football.
It can help a quarterback see some stuff and work on some things, but it's not the same. I mean, putting offensive linemen, defensive linemen coming at you is a completely different game. But one other thing you said that Tom said was, we rank the quarterbacks. Does anyone ever rank the coordinators or the head coaches or the defensive coordinators that they're facing each week? And how does that break down? No, we just rank the quarterbacks based on how they play. And if they aren't good enough in our eyes, we cast them aside while they could still be developing. And then they can develop into a very, very good player. And we've seen guys go other places become really good quarterbacks that lead their team to the playoffs and so on. So, yeah, it was just an interesting conversation that I saw between those two. And it keeps coming back to that discussion we've had where it's just everybody expects perfection almost immediately. And I'm sorry, not 2 years. That's immediate to me. If you don't see a franchise quarterback in under 2 years, you're going to just get rid of the guy. That's insane to me.
Well, how about the opposite? When you see a guy that you think's really good and then he loses his coordinator, and then the next 3 years, the guy's not a good, he regressed and he never gets back and becomes a journeyman. So it happens both ways. And you say, okay, maybe I should have, hell, it was fool's gold. And getting to the 7-on-7 and practice and all that. Listen, man, more guys eliminate themselves, not by physical mistakes, because I don't believe physical mistakes lead to mental mistakes. I think it's opposite. If you're not mentally into it, it makes you hurried. It makes you desperate. It leads to physical mistakes. Then turns around and your mind's sped up and your feet have slowed down. And you want the opposite. Mind slow down, feet speed up. And where you're playing fast, but your mind's thinking slower so you can dissect what's going on. If these guys knew at the beginning of their career what they knew at the end of their career, they would have prepared different. And I do know this. Yeah. You mentioned Brady in year six is still learning defenses. Well, why would Tiger Woods got a golf coach in year 15? He's still learning. So to me, just usually, unless you're lucky, just when you figure it out how to play. I mean, I wish I knew then, even though I felt like I was football IQ, what I know now about coordinators and coverage segs. And you know what? Just when you figure it out physically or mentally, should I say, you think, I got a pretty good idea, the snapshot.
Yeah.
Physically, you can't do the things you did when you were 25. And I'm going to say it again about players, anybody that's listening. If you got a young, you coach in Pop Warner, as they get older, I tell my high school kids all the way through, go sit with a defensive coach on your staff every week. Not just your offensive guy. It's a different perspective. And I would form a relationship with the coordinator and say, how would you defend me? What are my tells? What am I doing that makes you think that you could game plan me?
Right.
And I would visit with him an hour a week. Brady and Belichick, say, because I think you were on my show the day when I had Tom Brady's dad on. Were you producing the show that day?
Yep.
And I asked him about Tom and Bill's relationship. He had a good relationship. He goes, but Sean, they've never had a casual meal together in 20 years.
Yeah.
I said, what?
Yep.
But you know what they did do? They kept it businesslike, which is not surprising for both of them. But they did meet in the middle of the week every week to talk about strategy and the way they were going to attack and go about their business. So they were on the same page. So they were probably finish each other's sentences.
Right.
But if you young quarterbacks out there, if you're Jaden Daniels, you should be visiting with the defensive coordinator. If you're CJ Stroud, how would you defend me?
Right.
And find out each week and then go back and watch a cut up together. Find an hour to watch them with the coordinator. Say, well, what did I do wrong here? Well, here's what they're thinking on this coverage when they bring the safety down in three sky. And when they say, well, Sean, that's a lot of work. Well, guess what? To be great,
it takes
a lot of lonely work that, you know, you're going to have to give up some shit in order to get what you want. If not, it'll show through and you'll get caught up with. And then they'll be thinking about the next guy. So the great eliminator is not that you can't throw it. The great eliminator is you can't think it fast enough to process and get to the next level to make plays happen in about 2.7 seconds at the most, 2.75, which is absurd but factual.
It's nuts because I'm in the process right now of, you know, I try and learn as much about the quarterback position because my son is 10 and he plays quarterback and he's in his he's in his third year of tackle football, and last year he was not the starter. This year he is, and he's taken off, and it's you know, fun to see, but it's also fun to learn. You know, I don't know stuff about it, and I'm definitely going to have you work with him at some point, but it's figuring out, okay, you got to be able to see it. And, you know, like one of his coaches tells him just to throw the ball, like, here's the play, throw it. And it's just like, no, like I want him to learn to see.
And why can't you teach him where to throw it at 10? These kids, we don't give kids enough for being smarter than they're smarter.
Right.
They want more information. They just do. And they'll get exactly what you ask them to give. And if you ask them to give less, they'll get less. That's just the way it is.
Exactly. It's such a
Overloading them with too much jargon and football stuff, right? Just let them play. But there's got to be a reason. I guess I'm one of those guys, when somebody asks why, I want to tell you why we're throwing it there, not just to throw it there.
Right.
Even at 10. Hell, they know more math than we do at 10 with all the new math shit that none of us want to figure out. So give them something to hang their hat on. Okay, but why am I – and you, Segs, I'm not – you know how. You and I have had so much football conversation, you could probably finish some of my sentences too. But when it comes to it, I would tell you one thing to tell you, your son, is when it comes to that, ask why. Why the coach? Why?
Mm-hmm.
And if the coach is – eventually that coach one day is going to say, you know, I had this kid, last name Segs, 20 years ago, that I learned how to coach better because he kept asking at 10 years old, why?
Yep.
And if I know what the conflict is, if I don't know why there's a conflict, how am I going to get the answer to the test? Eventually, I don't care how physically good you are, The guy that separates the guys in pros, there's a lot of physical good players, say, at wide receiver, linebacker, that are going to do what you and I are doing Saturday and Sunday, watching football
right.
because they couldn't process that. Not that they're dumb, but that it just didn't process. Some people are English people and some people are math people. You go into a math class, if you're not a math guy, and you say, I'm just taking the test to get out so I can get my degree, and I'm not going to remember what a postulate and a theorem is and how to, you know, how to figure out pi, okay?
Right.
And then you know how every grammar and every, you know, pronoun and all, you know all that to a T, and you're just getting in to get out. But with quarterback, the information can't be, oh, it's just a game plan to get in and get out till the next one. No, it's got to be information that you soak in, that you remember and recall on certain plays and certain days. So it's all encompassing. You got to know it all. And unfortunately, the more you know, but the more you can bring it in, flush it out, and recall it in moments of stress and in pressure in a game, you'll be a better player. And I don't care if they're 10 or 110. If I know where the conflict is, I have answers to the test as a coach. I just do.
Yep.
Which means that the why question, and I don't care if it drives a coach crazy. Why? I don't know why. You know, we see those TV like a commercial. Why, Dad? Why?
Yeah, if eventually, you can't answer why as a coach, then you probably shouldn't be coaching.
Shouldn't be coaching. Listen to the song by Kane Brown. What's got his like daddy, his daughter's with him in the car. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've heard the cut, Segs. I'm sure yep. you've thought about it. Like your daughter, because you probably, yep. and he says, she says, Daddy, did you see the plane in the sky? How the verbiage goes.
The plane flew by,
you know, whatever it is. And he says, and I wish, you know, my talking about his daughter sitting in the back, that the thing she sees on the side of the road in that window out the side of her, and Daddy, did you see the plane in the sky? Right. That song,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I think about it all the time. I think, driving, how many of us with kids said, oh my gosh, why your dad? Why does the car move? Because my foot's pushing on the gas. Well, why is there gas there? And so you start to go through it. You think, man, I wish I was more like her, which he says in the song.
Yes.
It's the same thing here. The quarterback who asks the why, if you don't get an answer, ask why until you get one.
Right.
And then it'll just elevate the play. And then the physical stuff will take care of itself.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, it's something going through. I coach their travel basketball. I help out right. with their baseball. But it's like, if you're going to coach kids, and he is lucky to have a very good head coach / offensive coach that, you know, is really helping him out and setting him up for success in the way they run their
Perfect.
Offense and stuff. It's been a great year, but if you don't really want to coach, don't coach. There's somebody else that really
volunteer
wants
is one to thing, coach. But coach it right. Take some pride yes. in it, whether you're getting yes. paid or volunteer coaching.
Exactly.
This is the most impactful time in a kid's life as far as whether he loves the game or hates it. Mm-hmm. And a coach can ruin it or a coach can help it. And
yes.
to me, this age where you want them to want to do lonely work, you want them to want to, like when I have my quarterbacks, their dad, I got to the point of their dad's mom, you have your kid call me to set up the appointment.
Yeah.
I want to make sure they love it, not you. I know right. you love it or you wouldn't have them playing.
Right.
And Dr. J, as Segs has heard me and so have you over the years, when they talk about a strong arm, listen, I don't care if you can throw it, you got 6 Russian cosmonauts and a micrometer. I'm not sure what that means, but I know it's fast and powerful and explosive. And bam, dude, I had a coach say that in the NFL all the time. He goes, Sean, Kenny Meyer here. You got an arm like it's 6 Russian cosmonauts and a micrometer. And I said, what does that mean? He goes, I don't know, but I know one thing. It's strong and powerful, but I got to make sure that missile actually hits the target, right?
Yes.
And when it's easier to hit a target when you know where the target is and why you're throwing it to it.
Right.
Ask why all the time.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump to the NFL. Let's run through 2 quick games. I think the 2 better games this week, and then we'll jump to quick to college and kind of talk about Billy Napier and stuff like that. But let's start in Detroit. Ben Johnson heads back to Detroit for the first time in week 2, facing the Detroit Lions, who come off the week 1 loss to the Green Bay Packers. Did not look good. Jared Goff didn't look great. The offense was kind of discombobulated. It was kind of a shit show for the Detroit Lions in week 1 on both sides of the ball, I thought. Dan Campbell says this week, we got to win this one. And I think it was partially because of Ben Johnson and partially because we can't go 0-2 with our schedule coming up. So,
and in that division, Segs, too.
Yes, in that division. So if the Lions happen to lose on Sunday, are they in trouble? And let me read off their schedule coming up. Next week, they're at Baltimore, home against Cleveland, at Cincinnati, at Kansas City, home against Tampa Bay, home against Minnesota, at Washington, at Philly. That's their next set of games after this Chicago game.
That could be so like
if the Bears walk in and beat them and they look like they did in week one, now everyone's going to be panicking because our offense doesn't look nearly as good. You mentioned it. A coordinator leaves and Jared Goff kind of heads back to the old Jared Goff. And then he's just that journeyman guy who's maybe not really good. And then it's, we got all these weapons, but nobody knows how to use them like Ben Johnson did. Our defense is struggling because Glenn's in New York with the Jets now.
And the offense,
how big of a game is this? Right. Yes. How big of a game is this for the Detroit Lions in the full scheme of things?
Huge. And I love, remember Segs when Jared Goff got there in his first year there, I think it was. And Dan Campbell stood up on the microphone and said, "I need more from Jared Goff." And he named him.
Yep.
After the trade, they were struggling. He said, I need him to play better. I need more from him," which was a compliment, but also a memo to say, dude, damn right. And he got more from him. And look at the result now as we move forward. This is Dan Campbell, the football player and the coach who understands the urgency of this. How many times do we hear Segs, "Oh, September's not that important. Be ready in December. Go 0-4 in September and you ain't got a shit chance in December anyway." And then players only meetings will start to kick in. And when players only meetings kick in, your season's done. You might as well put your head between your legs and kiss your ass goodbye. Players only meetings lead to bitch fests. And that's when you know you're desperate. You're scrambling for anything. Dan Campbell, how many people in week two put that much urgency on a game? Very few. But Segs, here's why. Think about the Bengals. We've talked about this. They're slow. So they didn't play good last week, but they did win. In the past, it's like 1-3. And then they play great for 10 games, and they just missed the playoffs by what? A game, and they were the hottest team in the league. That happened to me in Seattle my rookie year. Honest to God truth. We are rolling like 5 or 6 in a row. David Craig is playing out of his friggin' mind. I'm talking about Segs. It was amazing to watch. Largent that year passed the all-time receiving record and was number one. And I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, David Craig putting on a clinic every week. He could have put a blindfold on. The ball was going to our guy, right? So we roll through. We get to, I think we were 10-6. And on the last Saturday of the season, now they play Saturday, Sunday games. Yeah. Denver came to town. I think we beat them 41-17. We curb stomped their ass. And we made it miserable on Elway, and we killed them. So that's a Saturday. So we're just waiting. We're getting in. The next day, we just needed either Pittsburgh, Kansas City, or somebody. One of the three. I think I've told you this story.
Yeah.
Well, we Saturday hits. Kansas City Chiefs get 3 special teams touchdowns. They win. Pittsburgh won 2, and there was one other team. We lost them all. I mean, all 3 of them won. We missed out on the wild card, and there was no hotter team in the league. Had we got in, it would be like, ooh. We became – and all the talk nationally was, man, if the Seahawks get in, this is a dangerous team. Kenny Easley, Jacob Green, Kurt Warner, the running back, the original. Mm-hmm. We were friggin' loaded, man. And David Craig was hot as large – on fire. We didn't get in. And it was like, I can't believe this. At first, I wanted the playoff money as a rookie. But I'm watching this. I'm saying, Albert Lewis blocks a kick. They go score. Somebody else returns a punt. They go, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And one by one, by the end of the day, we miss out at 10-6. Had we won a game we were supposed to win in September, we're 11-5, and we're not worried about the last day. So it does matter. And I love that Campbell has placed urgency, meaning, well, if you put a must-win and you lose, what's your team in response? Screw them. They're adults. They better know how to adjust to the game 3. The schedule says, this is must. Not only that, just the grind that if Ben Johnson comes in and throws a party on your defense, if you're trying too hard to prove to Ben Johnson we can win without him, and watch the matchup between the current coordinator now in Detroit and Ben Johnson. Watch him try to keep up. I'll bet you're going to see more movement and all. You watch. So. Placing the urgency, and quite frankly, Segs, for the most part, Chicago played better in their first game than Detroit did in theirs. Now, I know the opponent was different, but I'm just telling you, flounder around and do not think for a second, even though he left there on great terms and it was a great coordinator, you don't think Ben Johnson wants to hang 40 on them? There's no doubt. So I think not only is it important, I actually think it's a monumental game and a huge matchup that will be understated during the week. Because, well, the Bears are still trying to learn, but it's a good quarterback matchup. But the sidebar of Ben Johnson going back and your best coordinator is coaching the other team, no doubt it matters. But I like Dan Campbell's urgency to put it on the players that we have to win. And with that schedule, Dan also knows, Segs, don't kid yourself, looking at the schedule and the way they've played, that he knows, oh, we're good, but damn, we could be looked at as awful bad if we're 1-4 to start against good teams.
Yeah, I mean, you lose this week, you go to Baltimore. I don't want to say
well, there. I got news for you. The way they're playing, they ain't going into Baltimore and winning. Okay, right. That's exactly. Not happening.
All right, and then the other game, Philly at KC, Super Bowl rematch. It's a 3:25 Central kickoff, afternoon game on CBS, I believe it was. Philly actually favored in this game at -1.5 over under.
It's in Arrowhead, you said, right, Segs? Yes. On the road, right?
46.5 is the over under. So a road favorite. For these two teams, it feels like a low number, but you're not most likely not going to have Xavier Worthy for the Chiefs. And we saw the Eagles go in with Dallas and not score like we thought they would. So it's kind of one of those games where I'm feeling the under, but in my head, I'm telling myself, take the over, because both these teams want to show that we're still who we are. We can still score with the best of them, and then we're going to try and play good defense. But it's going to be a fascinating game, because in Arrowhead, how does, you know, Jalen Carter's playing his first game since the suspension. How does that go? That young defense, how did they respond after an okay game against Dallas, but a Dallas team that wasn't supposed to be much offensively, besides Dak just chucking it everywhere, gave up 2 rushing touchdowns. It's going to be interesting to see how these two teams come back from week one.
I'm leaning towards the under as well, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't think Kansas City's offense is that good.
That's the thing.
I just don't. I think Philadelphia can score 30, 28, yeah. Like a 28-17. The fact that they have Mahomes, the great Mahomes and Andy Reid, put it this way, if I was looking at an average quarterback and an average play caller, Philadelphia's personnel on both sides of the ball is sans Chris Jones and a couple is way better. They're far better. It's not even close. So to me, I tell you what, I fear 10 offenses more than I do the Kansas City Chiefs personnel. Kansas City Chiefs personnel, offensive perimeter people, to me are just guys. And I know that,
especially without Xavier Worthy.
Now, when you say, Sean, what are you talking about? This is Kansas City. I've given Kansas City all the respect in the world over the years, Segs. That's not my problem. My issue is I just don't think they're explosive anymore. They play a lot of sideways football. Kelsey's another year older, and I know that he's got a lot going on. He's still a good player. But to me, offensive personnel, I say this. How many guys on the offensive side of the ball, sans Mahomes and maybe a lineman or two, are starting for Philadelphia's offense? Yeah, that's what I thought you'd say. Exactly. Yeah. Kelsey's gonna get time.
Probably over Goddard. Ends, right?
Are you sure? But Goddard's a good player.
Yeah.
But then you talk about, you know, when they're healthy in line, they got a good tackle. They're better than they were in the Super Bowl in the offensive line. Let's put it that way. But other than that, no running back start. Maybe an offensive lineman. The tight end, they'd have 2 times. And no wide receiver on that team sniffs the first 3 on the other team.
No.
With Worthy hurt. So, for me, I think Philadelphia goes in there and beats them. Now, maybe close, because Mahomes can always keep you in games. But other than Mahomes and Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs offense in the last year and a half, they don't impress me. Now, they're efficient, and Andy gets them out, and they're going, and they got great game plan. But I think Philadelphia is going to control the front 7, the line of scrimmage. I think Philadelphia's got far better weapons. I actually think the under hits, and I don't think – I have no problem betting Philadelphia going into their building on the money line and taking them going and win clean. I do. I don't think Kansas City's winning the division, Sakes. I don't.
Yeah.
They don't scare me. Mahomes does always, because he's so good. And Andy Reid's always got a plan. Their perimeter people, I can go with 10 teams right now that I'd take over the Kansas City Chiefs outside the quarterback.
Yeah, it feels like a 24-13, 24-14.
Late 16 game, 24-20, and they get a late score. Yes.
Yeah,
I would agree. That. And then Philadelphia is just running out the clock at the end because they got a 7 or 8 point lead. That's how I feel about this game. Philadelphia's personnel offensively, it's a different league. The quarterback's the great equalizer, but ain't exactly like Jalen Hurts' chopped liver, dude. He knows how to play in big games.
Yeah. All right, let's jump to Saturday. College games. Florida. Rough start to the season. Rough start. Goes to Baton Rouge at night to play number three LSU. LSU is only a 7.5-point favorite. I thought it was going to be bigger when I looked it up.
Which makes you say, what does Vegas know, right?
There right. You always question that. But, I mean, this game isn't going to be close just based off how Florida's played, right? And how big of trouble is Billy Napier in?
And Billy won't give up the play calling duties. He just won't
He won't.
It's constant, but Billy's been stubborn about it. And quite frankly, the problem with this team has been consistent offense. And yet we say that. And their quarterback in Lagway is a really – Lagway, he's going to be a high first-round pick. He's a very talented kid and a great kid. But, Stegs, 7.5 I get. And when Vegas sets that, I think this is kind of a weird-looking line because it should be like 11.5 or 12, I would think. Though, by play. Now, LSU played an inferior opponent. They didn't play well last week. But after game one of the season, hell, I could have made LSU the number one team in the country and I had no problem. Their quarterback's going to throw a party on them. Nussmeier is going to play well.
And especially after struggling last week.
No question. Yes. He
wants to come out and throw
a party. Doubt. And listen, you're playing a huge game that everybody wants to see. It's Florida. It's a riot. It's still Florida. Mm-hmm. Florida is desperate for a win because they've been humiliated in their first two. I mean, they just have not played good football. So the question is, how hard are they trying? What are they going? Odds would say that they're going to play better. But, Segs, guess where you don't want to go to play a game when you're trying to get right is a night game in Death Valley in Baton Rouge. I've been there and watched the movie. It ain't good. I don't see, especially if LSU starts out two touchdowns up early and that crowd gets a rocking. And USF is pretty good. You're right.
We'll talk still, about them in a minute.
Yeah. I don't see, maybe a late cover, Segs, but by the time when we come out of this game, you're going to say, man, the score was closer possibly than it should have been. LSU, this is a get-right game. It's the wrong place to have to do it. Give me LSU, and I would take LSU and give you the points if it's 7.5 at game time.
Yeah, I would do the same. All right, we got Georgia, number 6, at Tennessee, number 15. Georgia, 3.5-point road favorite, and they got the over-under set on this one at 50.5. Quarterback at Tennessee, the kid from UCLA Aguilar has come in and played well, but I think we expect a little more from Tennessee in terms of just offensive output and stuff, but nobody's talking about Georgia. Georgia's just the team that they feel like the forgotten team when you just look at the top 10 and the way everyone's talking about everybody. Nobody says much about Georgia, and they just keep trucking along as one of the best teams in the nation every single year.
I like Tennessee toughness at offense with Aguilar more than I do Nico. There's a different tug now. Nico's a gifted player, but that swap, I think Tennessee becomes tougher on offense. I like his personality, Segs, as a leader. I do. But Georgia, for the first time in about 4 or 5 years, dare we say, is flying under the radar as the Georgia Bulldogs. Because we're kind of like, well, how good's the quarterback? And, I mean, we know they're going to be physical.
Right.
Their favorites on the road going to Knoxville. Is that what you said? This game's in Knoxville, right?
Yep.
If I bet this game, I'm betting Georgia. But I'm going to tell you, it might have to be on the money line because I think it's going to be a fourth quarter late game. I do. Now, if we talked about the toughness of the quarterback at Tennessee – he's going to have to show it this week because even though it's at home, the one thing I know what Kirby Smart's not coming in to do is beat you with finesse, okay? So try to pound him, and you know exactly what Tennessee wants to do in Josh Heupel. They want to play fast, and they want to run 85 or 90 plays.
Yep.
I give Tennessee a legitimate shot, Segs. I do, because I think they're pretty battle-tested over there, and Heupel's a good offensive play caller, but – don't let Georgia get up early and feast on you because they will cut it loose defensively. And while the names have changed, the way they play hasn't. They'll get after. And I like the fact that even though they're not an underdog in this game, they're kind of a national championship underdog the way people are talking. Yes. But it's really hard for me, no matter who they're playing, to bet against a Georgia team that plays pissed. I think this is going to be a close game. I actually think it's a late fourth quarter game. Give me Georgia. But if we're sitting here Monday and we will be talking about it and you say Tennessee beat them by a field goal, it shouldn't surprise you. Tennessee's tougher than we think. Matter, I'm talking about mentally and emotionally tougher. But they're going to need a couple chunk plays in the game to win the game. It can't, they're not going to be able to grind it out and say we ran 70 plays or 65 plays and beat Georgia. They're going to have to do – they're going to have to hit that slant, break a tackle, go 80 yards, a chunk play or two along the way to try and to break Georgia's back. But don't get behind and get into a throwing contest because they'll feast on your quarterback. That's who Georgia is.
Yeah. All right, let's jump to somebody brought up, I think it was Dr. J, USF, now ranked number 18, travels to Miami to play the fifth-ranked Hurricanes. And Carson Beck and the Hurricanes have looked good. They are a 17.5-point favorite at home and a 56.5 total. Carson Beck's played good, but Byron Brown was a kid not a lot of people know about, but he leads the team in passing, obviously, as the quarterback, and leads the team in rushing. This is a dangerous USF team that if Miami's kind of thinking like, oh, just, you know, come on down, play us. We'll show you what really is USF.
Big boy football is.
Not beating Boise State, who's a very good program, very good team. And then, of course, beating Florida. It's just Miami cannot take this lightly at all, or they will come out with a loss like Miami has done in the past few years. They lose a game they probably shouldn't.
I don't trust Carson Beck enough yet, Segs. I just don't. I got to see more. Yep. I know he's a talented kid, and I know a change is good for him. The Carson Beck I saw early at Georgia was spectacular. The Carson Beck I saw late at Georgia had this. Is this going to turn into DJ Uiagalelei, right? Uiagalelei, and be a guy who just we already seen his best football. Miami started well, and he's a good, talented player. But 17.5 for me is way too much. The way U.S. that seems big, which, again, whenever I see a line like this.
Surprised.
See, to me, I think this is, if we have upsets alerts, I think this is a flashing neon sign. And I am sure that Miami, their coaching staff is talking to them saying, do not. And they're in the same state, obviously. I don't think that they're taking it lightly. But I'm going to tell you what, that quarterback two dimensions going to break some plays open. I don't think Miami runs away and hides with this. I do think it's upset alert. And I think in my heart that this is a game. I've been looking at this all week. I'm betting this game. And right now, I am telling you right now, I am taking USF to get inside that number. And there's this temp. Yeah, hell yes.
I'm and it opened it. It opened at 15.5. So it's actually gone up. Yeah.
Right. Well, now as it and I'm keeping a close eye on that between now and early tomorrow morning, Segs, to see what the sharps are doing on this and where the money starts to go.
Right.
Of course. And you know what? They're a blue blood program, Segs. Miami. It's the Hurricanes. We're back. Are they back? We've heard it talked about. Man, does Mario Cristobal got them back? And there's hints of it. The Michael's on the sidelines and they're winning games in big fashion, doing them. But these are dangerous games. It's right in week three. You got a big spread. Players know that they're favored. Give me USF with those points. And I think that I don't think Miami gets to run away and hide with this. We're going to see if the physicality of USF can keep up for four quarters with Miami. Did a good job against Boise State. They are better than you think. And right now, which quarterback do you trust more in truth in this game, Sakes? Who's the bigger playmaker?
Oh, Byron Brown is the bigger playmaker for sure.
But he's going to be facing this big-time competition. Yep. And Carson Beck's got a chance to kind of make up for how it ended at Georgia. And I'm sure that's on his mind. And he's played pretty good football. I like USF inside the number. I think that if you're giving me 17.5, I'll take it.
Yeah. Real quick, I didn't even have this game written down. Wisconsin travels to Bama. Should the Tide be a little worried?
Yeah, I can't imagine, Segs, that they are going to go in and trip on their dick during this game. I'm talking about Alabama, but
it'll be such a big story if they lose this game to Wisconsin.
And they're at Tuscaloosa, right? And you know, yes. Wisconsin's philosophy is going to what? We're going to run it. We're going to have the big guys lean on you. We are going to play defense, and Luke Fickell is a hell of a defensive coach. Mm-hmm. And what they're going to try to do is hang around in the fourth quarter, So one score game gives you a chance to win. And right now, I do love Alabama's quarterback. I think he's got a great future. I think he's going to be a really good player, Siggs. Mm-hmm. But what's his Simpson? Is that his last name?
Yeah,
I think
it's right.
Yeah, Ty Simpson. That's it. I think he's got game. But Siggs, think about how the pressure started to mount. And as a coach and a player, you feel that.
Yes.
So it's hard to play freewheeling when you're looking over your shoulder wondering, what are they going to do if all of a sudden, even if they win 17-13, Siggs, and it's an ugly win, they'll take the win, but people are going to be beside themselves.
Yes.
So what's Alabama favored by, Siggs? A field goal? 2.5, 3 points, something like that? It's got to be. It's got to be inside 4 points, right? 3 points, 3.5, 2.5 points.
Yeah, something like that. I'd have to pull it up. I didn't have that one.
I should have looked, and I didn't. But if somebody knows, pop it up
there. Alabama by 20.5.
Seriously?
Yeah, that's on ESPN. That's ESPN bet.
See, I would have said at the most, if you said, Sean, what do you think of big 6.5, maybe?
Yeah.
The way they've played. This is a reputation
and a
bet.
Total of 44.5. So that's telling you what they think.
They expect the that they're going to kick their ass.
And the defense dominate the Wisconsin offense.
If this was a Nick Saban team that would have got beat, I know they'd have responded. I said they're going to win by 40, okay? But I don't know how they're going to start. I don't know what the buy-in is. To me, that feels like I'd still take Wisconsin with the number because on a score that if it's that low scoring, that basically means just give me 2 touchdowns if you're Wisconsin and you win, 30-14, Wisconsin gets inside the number. I think Alabama's going to win a game. If they don't, Kalen DeBoer better find a buyer for
his
home.
Name will be as loud spoken as Billy Napier's.
No doubt. And Wisconsin, though, in truth's sakes, they don't ever scare me right now they're going to hang 40 on Alabama. I'm not worried about that. They're going to play it typical defensive head coach. Play it close within a 6 points at the end and try to shorten the game and see, because they also know that Alabama's reeling. And if you can get on them early, they may start to finger point their own team, right? So you don't want this to hang around. If Alabama starts fast, they'll cover this game. But I don't think Wisconsin's great, but I do know they're physical. They always are. So think the under, but I think that's too much for an Alabama team that is carrying around the burden of having to win, not just wanting to, but also needing to win.
Yeah, and then final game of the weekend for us talking about number 16, A&M, travels to South Bend, take on number 8, Notre Dame. Notre Dame had the weird week 2 bye. Like, I mean, what are we doing with college football schedules?
Yeah, but
that's another discussion. Do you trust Marcel Reed walking into South Bend in that environment and taking care of the football enough against a very good Notre Dame defense? And then on the flip side, how do you feel about the young CJ Carr getting his second start against another top-ranked team?
Low-scoring, two great defensive coaches on this. Mm-hmm. They're head coaches, right? Freeman, both coaches that have cut their teeth coaching defense, and they get it. And why am I losing my mind? A&M's head coach. Dude, I'm only here in Texas to talk about him.
I know.
Every freaking day.
Texas.
A&M. Why am I – you just – Mike Elko. There you go.
It was right on the tip of my tongue.
Right. I would expect low scoring. And back to real quick, Wisconsin. I'm not sure the status on Wisconsin. I thought he got banged up. I don't know if he's playing or not. I haven't looked at the Wisconsin injury report. So you may be right. I don't know what the injury report is. But even then, I just still think that's a lot of points. And in a low scoring game, you don't need to score much if you're just taking the under in the game. So I like Notre Dame in the game. I do. Now they have another quarterback. He played great last week. A&M's quarterback's explosive talent, but they can limit it. And I'm a big fan of both. I just think I don't see Notre Dame going 0-2, and that's a tough place to go play. It is, and there's the history there. But maybe, just maybe, and you know what? Over the years, and this isn't fair to Elko and their team, is that I always think that Texas A&M's offense lets them down at times, right? And early in the season. I think with a week off, I think that Freeman will have his team ready to play. I think it'll be a close game. Who's the favorite, Segs? Do we know?
Notre Dame actually opened up as a 9.5-point favorite. That's all
a little
the way
too
down
much
to
for
six
me.
And a half.
Yeah, a little too much for me.
Now.
I would have said, if you didn't tell me the spread, I would have said field goal game, give me Notre Dame in a low scoring game late. Okay. I think like I would have said 20-16, 21-17, 23-20. And yeah, that may be a struggle to get to that many points because I think both defenses, I don't think either offense is overly explosive just yet. Now, more talent, the talent, young talent on Notre Dame side, and they have elevated their play offensively at A&M, both teams' defense. And it's a it can be an environment. It's the, with the history of Notre Dame. I think that's too much. But as the number goes down, that obviously is good for Texas A&M. I still think Notre Dame wins in a close one.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you talk about CJ Carr entering week two.
He's going to be a hell of a player.
Number two. Yeah, he's got huge upside. But I think this week, Marcus Freeman will focus on getting Jeremiah Love the ball a lot more. Only carried it 10 times for only 33 yards. And I think you help the youngster in another big game by featuring your first round talent running back a lot more than just 10 times running the football. And the other kid carried it quite a bit as well and carried it well. But getting Jeremiah Love going is the biggest thing that Notre Dame needs to get going.
If Jeremiah, if Love carries it 20, if I don't see 25 touches in the game, then Texas A&M is going to go home and win.
Yeah,
probably. So there's no doubt you make it easier on the quarterback, and he's one of the most explosive runners in the country. He's got to touch it, and 10 is not enough. You play, that's why you got to stay in sync and not get down too much or it becomes a passing fancy. It'll only make a young quarterback better. He does have to carry the ball, has to touch it, and you got to force feed it. You can't abandon it early. And at home, it'll favor you. Yeah, Love 20-plus carries. Notre Dame wins by, you know, a touchdown or a field goal right in that range.
But if Notre Dame does lose 0-2, are the playoffs in real jeopardy?
Yes.
Because they get to 0-3, they're not going to make it hard.
Right.
Going down the stretch, like these are their two hardest games up front. But, I mean, it's not – you still got to play USC. You still got to play –
They're always a voting favorite. For whatever committees and all that, everybody loves Notre Dame when it comes to this. But they get to three. They're going to lose another game this year. I believe that. I do.
So if even you lose this one, that three-loss team in the playoff, I just don't see it.
Unless all hell breaks loose in college football and we have really good teams getting their ass kicked, like Clemson keeps playing the way they're playing. No, Alabama doesn't figure it out. You know, that type of thing. SC's defense doesn't show up and they don't start to ride, even though they're not a top 50. You get my point.
Yeah.
Just looking around at the landscape, Florida doesn't pick it up. And you get a Florida State team that grabs a loss somewhere or beats somebody that's ranked higher than them. Notre Dame with three losses is going to be in a major chase mode. Although the schedule favors them fairly, a two-loss Notre Dame team will get in. That's just who it is. A one-loss won't. This goes a long way to Notre Dame's future success this year. I like Notre Dame in a close one, even though I think A&M's improved.
I like it. All right. Well, should be a fun weekend of football. Yeah, I've got high school football I'm going to go watch. I got my son's game on Sunday, and then all this that we just talked about. So I got a lot of football to look forward to.
All right, ton of it too. Good luck to your boy. Have a blast. Thank you. I'm going to go probably be the next Ludwig Oberg today on the golf course. I'll probably be Ludwig. Solid ball striker.
He sucks. I'm just
Whoa! How can you dog Ludwig? Okay, I mean he's the tall Swede. I'm the tall German. You know, I'm trying to match his and Harris English and Jake Knapp swing. And Sags, I'm a long way off, brother. It ain't happening.
Not happening.
Yeah. No shit. Okay.
Those guys are solid ball strikers.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a solid ball striker. Just doesn't happen to be a golf ball. Okay. Yeah, right. Have a good weekend to everybody, guys. By the way,
everybody,
thank you, man. Great stuff.
Have a good weekend. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Manny or Triple E and Laura. And we'll talk to you guys on Monday. Break it all down for you. All right. Peace.